take your seats. I would ask if you have a cell phone that you either turn it off or put it on silence, or we do not interrupt the meeting. Call meeting order, Ed's here. Okay. I need a motion to approve the minutes for the February 27th meeting.
So moved.
All paid by sign of aye.
Aye.
Both sides have it. Discussion item A.
All right, unified plan work program, we're required by law to approve each year before we can do all the things that you vote on. And Jim's here to talk about that.
Thanks, Ed. Good morning.
Good morning.
As Ed mentioned, we look at this each year. This is one of those perennial documents that the board approves. It helps, they put us in line with the federal rules of receive federal funding for planning areas. The Unified Planning Work Program is actually the document that lays out all the activities that we're going to be doing over the coming year to achieve the mission here at East West Gateway. So for 2014, the document that will be received, about $22.7 million worth of work. That work is categorized in four different categories. Research and planning and policy and community engagement and local government services. Underneath each of those main categories, we have activities that range from development of transportation improvement program to development and implementation of the regional plan for sustainable development. Anything we do here at East West Gateway is included in this document, lays out the work that's coming here. Now, that $22.7 million budget that's shown in the document, about $10.4 million of that is from Urban Area Security Initiative, the funding that goes to SMART. So the actual budget, and of that, about $9 million is actual pass-through dollars that we pass through to agencies, whether they're police departments or EMS or other agencies that work on homeland security issues. We are presenting the draft to you this month, and we'll be bringing the final document to you next month for your approval. We've already shared the document with our federal partners, Federal Highways, Federal Transit, and MoDOT and IDOT, so they can start to look through it and start their reviews. In April, we will bring the final document to you. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. If you do have comments, feel free to contact myself or Royce Powell.
Any questions for Jim? Thank you. Discussion item B.
All right, item B, the HUD grant that we received for a three-year period comes to an end at the end of this year. David, give us an update on that.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Over the last 2 years, we've brought periodic updates on the regional plan for sustainable development, the HUD grant that Ed just mentioned. Now we're ready to introduce to you the name and the look of the final plan, the plan document we expect to produce by the end of this year. We're calling this One STL, Many Communities, One Future. And we see this opportunity to work at a regional scale to incorporate a variety of practices and approaches that will create a prosperous, healthy, and vibrant future for the entire region and all the communities within it. Right now, we've completed a lot of work. We've got a number of committees involving over 180 people working on various parts of the project. We've hosted 33 meetings in 11 community planning areas across the region. That's involved already 40 separate municipalities in those areas. Working with St. Louis University, we've developed the Regional Data Center, which will provide access, public access for information and data on the region that could be available for not only local governments, but nonprofit organizations as well. And 60 reports have already been produced, with a number more to come this year. In the work with the 11 community planning areas, we identified a number of key issues and themes that seem to cross jurisdictional boundaries and be on the be on the list of concerns for our citizens. And these nine categories will become essentially the organizing focus of the plan as we work now in the next few months. So where we are right now, and to give you a schedule for the rest of the year, it is ambitious, but we think it's very doable. Next month, starting in April, we have a series of workshops, five workshops across the region for local government officials. And in your blue folder, you'll find a small pamphlet like this that has the dates and locations for those workshops. Jefferson, St. Charles, St. Louis, Madison, and St. Clair counties will all be hosting those workshops. They're going to be basically the same, so local officials can attend any of those if one date is more convenient than another. And those are going to be an opportunity for us to take all the information we've gathered, present the preliminary concepts to the local officials, but more importantly, we want to hear from them. What are their concerns at the regional scale? Where do they want to see the focus? And we want to engage in discussion about what are the successes and what are the challenges they're facing right now. Moving on into May and June, we've got a consultant team that will be working with five municipalities that were part of the community planning areas and identifying by looking at their codes and ordinances and practices, where are the best opportunities for sustainable practice, where are the challenges, and then that, along with the municipal workshops, are going to inform the development of the draft plan, which we expect to have by the end of July. We'll then go to open houses in August and September. We'll bring you the draft plan for the board meeting in September, and then come back in October with the final plan. Then at the annual meeting, we will be opening a session in the morning with an introduction to a toolkit of best practices for local government. They're all voluntary. They will be covering a wide range of issues and areas of opportunity. Again, we're starting on that process now, but these workshops in the next month are going to really inform that entire process. And then by December, we'll be getting implementation in plan. We hope that you'll be engaged and involved, and by the time the plan's done, we hope that this board and all of you will be champions for One STL. Any comments or questions?
Questions or comments for Dave? Okay. Thank you. Discussion item C.
Discussion item C. The St. Louis Regional Chamber has embarked on a new incentive to make the St. Louis region one of the top 10 metro in college attainment. And we have two gentlemen here to speak. One is Mark Lindrum, which is Vice President, Chief Human Resources. Mark is right here for Ameren. And CEO and President, I think, needs no introduction, but Joe Reagan. Joe, I think you're going to.
Yes, thank you. Actually, Mark's going to do the heavy lifting today, but I just wanted to come and be with him and tell you that this guy and his colleagues on what we call our Talent Council are doing an amazing job of looking at our top 10 goal for economic prosperity, job creation, personal wealth and well-being that we want for our entire region and for every one of our neighborhoods, and looking at the data of that and saying, how do we actually get to that top 10? What is the surest path to economic prosperity? And that surest path, we believe, is education attainment. Education attainment at all levels of the education spectrum, from GED to PhD. But when we look at East-West Gateway data, when we look at the Federal Reserve data for this last recession, for instance, in this Great Recession, employment for those with a bachelor's degree or higher in this nation was 4.5%. That's not the Great Recession. That's what we have known as full employment. So we know that there is as you all, as elected leaders who are trying to really serve your communities and bring about well-being and prosperity in every one of your neighborhoods, you know, whether you have jurisdiction over education or not, value of helping people get across that goal line. So we see it as a pathway to doing our job in terms of helping grow this regional economy, ensures that we know it's a difficult pathway. And we know that that it will take not just the business community, not just the education sector, not just government, but all of us working together to help our citizens get across the border. So Mark and his colleagues, he'll explain who they are, their vision, but I'll turn over to Mark and thank him publicly for all the good work that he's done.
Well, thanks for the introduction, John. I really appreciate being here with all of you because I'd really like to sit down individually with every one of you to have this conversation. I know everybody here is already sold on the idea that you know, education and attainment of certain levels of education has an impact on the lives of those that we all serve in our community. And we truly believe that as a region, focusing on college attainment is the one area that will help bridge many different initiatives that we have going on to really focus on this prosperity as a region. I'll admit, when we started this initiative as a talent council 3 to 4 years ago, we looked at how do we create talent as a top strategy for St. Louis. And this was part of the Regional Chamber's initiative as a strategy. The Regional Chamber, before that, knew talent was important, but didn't really have a front and center strategy. And today, it is front and center as a strategy for the business community to focus on talent. So what I want to do today is talk to you a little bit about how did we get where we are, why is this so important, and what we're going to ask of you, I'll tell you already, is really just be supportive of the work we're trying to do. We want to create one initiative for the entire region focused on attainment, and we believe that if we all focus on that together, it connects everything Joe just talked about, nonprofit community, it connects everything from GED to associates to bachelor's degrees. And we believe we'll produce a more vital, vibrant area and region. And we believe that it will lead to prosperity for all, for many different reasons. I went ahead and looked at your mission, actually, before I came to it. You know, we believe the region has the physical and human resources needed to overcome its problems, take full advantage of its potential, and offer its an excel quality of life. So we are right on target with what it is we're trying to do here together. And we're here today to say we're here to help you. And what we're asking is we work together on that. This slide really focuses in on really for where the RCGA or the Regional Chamber is. And we're really this broad band of community leaders. As many of you know, we span the entire region. The membership is very large with the business community. The one purpose is to inspire Greater St. Louis. You'll see a lot of focus. Many of you know Joe. You know he's very inspirational in the way he speaks about the region. And that's a fantastic thing. It's something we all need as we look to how do we connect all of the different stakeholders of this community. So at a broad level of the chamber, you know, we want to leverage today's strengths of these economic clusters. Many of you are aware we're focused in on certain areas of growth and trying to build that. But we will tell you the number one economic development driver of every one of those clusters, including everything not as a cluster, is the talent that we have in this community. We either get business or lose business based on talent, period. And so this becomes a vital issue for the region. I'm going to move through the slides relatively quick because I think the real core is what I did see towards the end in terms of how did we come to the conclusion of what we're focused on. But I will tell you, we started with let's boil the ocean. You can't touch this issue without getting into just about every aspect of the community. Whether you get into poverty, whether you get into, you know, high school completion, whether you get into different areas of our region, rural, metro, it touches this talent equation. And so we started with how are we going to attack this issue? I will tell you the end of the story is we believe college attainment is the one thing we can all focus on. Again, pull that together. The Regional Chamber Talent Council was the group that the chamber originally said can we create a strategy for talent. And so we pulled this group together. It's about 17 leaders. There are some nonprofit leaders. We do have some university leaders involved. And there are some corporate leaders involved. Not all HR-focused people. And the idea was, let's come together and figure out what can we do to rally the business community around this issue. What we found is it's not a business community issue, it's a community issue. So how do we rally the community is where we ended up. So we're working on creating this strategy to implement across the entire region. And just so you know, you are one of many meetings we're having today, and we're hosting a big talent summit on May 2nd that all of you are invited to. where we're really going to start to try to pull together a summit focused on talent, where we bring in all of the various stakeholders and sit down together and talk about how to achieve this. We've now created a higher education council in addition to this council. That is all of the university heads that are now coming together formally to meet and discuss how can they work together to support this degree attainment across the region. As many of you know, they all somewhat compete against each other. They realize that's the last thing they should be doing as they partner with the business community to create new jobs and education. I'm going to show you some statistics. Probably many of you know these statistics, but this one particularly focuses on bachelor's degrees. So this is the percentage of adults with bachelor's degrees. St. Louis actually ranks 14th. And as many of you know, we rank 19th in terms of population, but we rank 14th in terms of degrees, which is good. You can see from looking at this who's above us, and if you focus particularly on the Midwest, you look at Chicago, and you look at Minneapolis, you look at where Detroit is, we're sitting okay. But the bottom line is we know we can enhance this aspect of the community, and by enhancing this aspect, this is probably the number one economic indicator that new businesses look at when they look at our region, no matter where they're looking to locate in our region. They will look at this metric as a key metric. This is why we're focused there. But as Joe said, we are not focused on GED, high school completion. We're not focused on, so we are focused on all those things because they all feed. But this number one metric is key to the economic development piece. If you look at just where we sit, again, we offer a very competitive place to live and grow a family. I know many of you are working on immigration initiatives. This plays right into the statistic. It says, why is it important? How do we grow? We've been fairly flat. How do we grow? It's a combination of many things. But we also believe that the degree attainment will help us in growth, and we have an opportunity right through the gateway to do so. So why college is important to our region? We know that firms locate here, I already mentioned that. But the top 10 will set us apart. So as you look at that list I showed you earlier, being in the top 10, which is attainable, will actually set us off as a competitive advantage as Joe and others work to bring new business to this region and grow businesses already here. And why would an entrepreneur, build a business here? Because they know they can grow. And so that's the key reason. We know that a 1% increase in college attainment would equate to about a $2.4 billion increase in regional income. We know that basically, yes?
You say the BA plus, you mean bachelor arts or bachelor of science?
I do, absolutely. Thank you very much. So bachelor's generically,
bachelor.
For that clarification. And absolutely, and so we see this as not only an economic engine, but we see it as a way to increase quality of life. This focus is purely on the economic piece. If you look at the data relative to U.S. metros with the education attainment, you can see that education attainment does have an impact on the income levels of those that live there. It might be easier to look at this slide to get a better view of that in terms of what's meaning. These are median earnings of the St. Louis area, so this is our population. And you can see, while it's not always, there's always things on the edges here, on a total basis, there's a pretty significant difference when you look at those with higher education and what they're doing versus those that don't have that in our communities. So we believe by focusing on this, we will affect lives, and that's the important piece. And employers will benefit. So certainly, we have to serve the broader, those providing the jobs. Why are the members suddenly saying talent's their number one goal and initiative as we focus on regional growth? Most people think, the chamber's focused on just bringing the business or growing just economics. This is growing economics. This is growing the business. So when we look at how employers will benefit, we'll have more stronger workforce. We have the higher degrees are more prevalent. As you look at trends in occupations, degrees are required more often than they used to be. Higher degrees are offered more often than they used to be. So we also need to stay up with where are those jobs, where are those good jobs, and where are they going. Talented people attract other talented people. That's plain and simple. St. Louis is a college town. How often do you hear that? We are. We are a college town. When you look at McKinley, SIUE, SLU, Missouri Baptist, everything from the community college systems, SWIFT, and the St. Louis community colleges. We are a college town. We're one of the top college towns in the country. What do we do to retain people that are going to those colleges and having built businesses here and work here. That's an issue we're trying to get at. But we know that talented people will attract others. You know, when somebody says it's a good place to be, we can call them that all day. It's when their friend tells them it's a good place to be. If you look at how did we reach, what's it going to take to get to top 10%? What it means is roughly about 75,000 new degrees on top of what we already produce. So what this chart shows is that by 2025, if we stay right where we are, it will produce in our region about 717,000 bachelor's degrees. If we look at what we would need to be this top 10, this is based on the data we've analyzed, business folks, we've analyzed a lot of data. We believe it's about 790,000 on a run rate. So think about it as how many our new number is. Our current number is 717. In 2025, our new number needs to be 790 a year. So we need to be producing a lot of degrees, 75,000 over this period. So we've got a long way to go, and at the same time, it's very attainable. And so you think about, well, how do you move that line? Then we start to think about it. It means you get more associates to bachelor's. It means you get more kids to see a future out of high school. You need to focus on your associate degrees. There's a lot of things that go into moving the game, but you can see how it starts to touch so many other aspects of the community. This is probably the most important slide here, the one I really wanted to talk just briefly about. It. This is the one that really says, so how are we going to do this? And how are we going to do this as a region? And how are we going to make sure we're not missing anything? And so this started with the idea that if St. Louis was, we thought of it as a pie chart. So we're thinking about all the different things we need to do to achieve this goal. But this turned into even better. And so there's a handout that you have. And I apologize, I found out that they actually put one on the back of the packet, but we did a separate handout there because I think it's the most important. But if you look at this picture, let's just start with the kind of the goal at the top. Our current students. So the short gray there is really those with, you know, more than half completed bachelor's. So if you think about the shortest term goal for those that have already are current students, we'll help them finish, right? That's your number one easiest way, quickest way. The second objective would be that what about those half done? Can we support them better to make sure they finish? It's not all that start to finish. And then of course the big one would be those with high school completion and college enrollment. So as you think about planting the seeds for that longer term fruit, it really comes into long term. You don't forget about what's happening in college and high school. And it gets into helping colleges recruit talent to our colleges. We think about bringing business here, but what about bringing talent to our colleges? So it really changes your thing. You should think about some of the current students and getting them to come here. College graduates, you can start to see, but now that you know the format, I'm not going to go through every detail today. We will do that on May 2nd. But you can start to see that we didn't miss a group. So you've got college graduates already, can they attain higher? Working adults, what are we doing to support them? One of the things we surveyed is our group of HR folks that are part of this initiative. We asked them, what are they doing with their tuition? The answer was, we think of it as a benefit. We don't actually go out and use it as a tool to help our workforce grow. We don't, you know, we don't maybe do counseling to people, or we don't mentor enough. And so we admitted ourselves, we need to do a better job. We're spending a lot of money on this program. How can we invest more? So that's just one example of how we're looking at the current working adult population. There's many things that can be done. You can see the shorter term versus the longer term type initiatives. Unemployed adults, big effort there. You know, many of you are spending time because of the economy and have great programs. The idea is to create new programs, ideas to enhance your programs, support your programs. How can we be together? And then, of course, because of the last decade, we have a lot of veterans. And so we're doing a lot of support to say, can we do more? Many of the veterans have the means and the capability coming out of the military to finish some of these degrees. What can we do to better support that? So what can you do? What we're really asking is really to champion the message. That we're not asking you to champion this initiative per se. We don't see this as an initiative. We actually, after about 2-3 years, now talk about it more as a movement for the region. You know, it's not, people have been focused on this for a long time. It's not new. We're not suddenly coming up with the secret recipe. The secret recipe is we all support one another and use and leverage our resources together. So to champion the message, encourage, some of your HR professionals. You are a large employer. So what are we doing together to help employees finish college participating in upcoming regional events, and a second event, where we're really going to pull people together and go deeper into how does the region start to promote the fact that we're focused here together. And then share our best ideas, experiences, and energy to drive movement forward. So as you see there, we talked about, you know, driving that forward. So given we have 10, 15 minutes today, hopefully I maximized my time when I have 10, 15 minutes. The goal today was to give you a big picture, let you know what we're doing, why we're doing it, and give you a sense of what we can ask of you to support. And really, to come to that next event is what we're ultimately asking today. But I'll read the questions. Am I okay on time? Questions?
Dave, yes.
Yeah.
Two parts, I guess. One is, have you thought about engaging the regional workforce boards separate? Is that part of your plan?
Absolutely. We've thought about workforce boards. We've also thought about there are so many groups that are in this today. You know, we're just not seeing them all connected. So we're looking at the regional the veteran groups, for example, supporting vets out into the workforce. We look at the workforce boards. We look, you know, really, we're trying to take everybody's part of this. And while we see the regional chamber playing a role of kind of seeing kind of where we are, we kind of see this as Joe did a great analogy. So, you know, we kind of push the snowball up the hill. Once it's over, you're behind it, right? And so what we want to do is bring the resources and support and try to get people aligned more than anything.
Well, I know the Department of Labor is doing a lot of work to try to take those returning veterans and some of those skills into career programs. And so the other question I had is, if my memory serves, there was a program, Graduate St. Louis, which was modeled on Graduate Philadelphia, I believe.
Yes.
Is that still active at the chamber?
Yes, Jane Donahue, yes, absolutely. They would be a key part, and then you think of College Bound, you think of all kinds of groups that are out there doing what we want here. Absolutely, they'll be invited to that event and part of it. One thing I will mention too is we actually have both states now, out of Jeff City and Springfield, and a lot of their workforce and data folks have actually aligned to support us. And we also have commitments from all of the universities that are not part of the public university system to provide, almost all, I should say, to provide data into those databases so that we can actually now look at this as a metric. We couldn't even look at it as a metric before. So I'll add that too for more of those results.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I'd like to have a further, more lengthy discussion with you about several of these things. But real quickly, there was an editorial some time ago about the Missouri really down on the AP courses. But have your group looked at that? Because that, you know, if you could get credit,
An
AP class costs $63, and you know, a university that charges $50,000 a year to go there, you know, they take that. I mean, that would seem to be a real weak spot that we could improve real easily.
I agree completely with you. And one of the things we have done in education programs and employers, one of them we talked about is how are we helping get credits when, you know, people are already, you know, they might have done project management for 20 years. You know, there's things they can do in the workforce today to get credits for college completion that they're just not even doing today. So the AP piece, you know, helping get, you know, credit for those is key.
And there's a story this morning about not having enough low-income people applying to elite universities. And, you know, I've taught at different schools, and I know that that's strictly a function of parents and guidance counselors. Parents, guidance counselors don't realize what an elite university is, what the advantages might be to going there. You know, they're not going to be interested. Is there anything we can do in that area? And then the last thing, just are there any state models or regional models where they offer incentives to get graduates to come back? We've got a bright flight program to state to keep them from leaving. But do we have, has anybody done anything to get their people who go off to encourage them to come back? Maybe pay the interest on their student loans for 2 years or something like that to get them back.
The answer is those are all the things that this effort needs to put together to put quite up, right? If there's a program today, we should sign a line to support it, not create a different one, right? And so, yes, to answer your question, we need to continue to really emphasize this as a region. There are some great examples. Joe actually did a lot of work. He was really building a very similar type initiative. But one thing I want to touch on, you mentioned, you know, kind of low income. As part of this effort, as you think about the length of these rays in the longer term, you know, a lot of this is, you know, are we doing what we can to give folks the right aspiration at the right times? You know, so you got to get down into grade schools now. You got to get in about that fourth grade process. So then you have to also look at, well, are we helping people transition? So some of the mentoring and things that have to occur, they're going to come from church groups. They're going to come from local community. They're going to come from family, not, you know, like many of you, my grandmother probably had more to do with why I'm standing here today than just about anybody in my life. And so, you know, those kinds of things are going to have to happen. And so some of it's formative, and frankly, some of it's just saying, as a region, are we known as a talent place to live? And every area of government has it. But Joe, do you want to touch on the other cities?
Well, on the May 2nd event, we're actually going to bring a few regions from across the country in different perspectives, actually literally from each part, each region of the country, and to actually moderate a panel of some of the local leaders who are working on this in different aspects. I have been researched and I know of incentive programs that you're talking about in terms of that incentive back, and it's that becomes a difficult question in light of all of the other incentives. Now, personally, as a business guy, I don't mind giving away your tax dollars more than once, but you don't let me do that. So it's a really key discussion we have to have in light of everything else we do in terms of tax credits and incentives, TIFs and other things. We've got to look at this thing. What really are we trying to do? Are we, if we are about attracting more people to this region. And my firm belief is, you know, a lot of people ask the chicken and egg question, which comes first, the people or the jobs? Are we going to have jobs for all these people? I've looked at this, the data of our community, and it is about population growth. We create jobs. We create jobs as a region. We aren't able to sustain and break through because we've not had the population growth that other communities have. And so I think you raise a really important policy question. There's no simple answer to that. I think there's in Kalamazoo, the Kalamazoo Promise, and other areas where they've created more of an incentive to stay, probably has the most fruitful benefit too. In other words, at some point, it's like an incentive retention bonus in a company. Those communities have created an environment that if you stay, it is much better economically for you than if you were to leave. So, you know, we need to dig in and we need to have that debate and that discussion vis-a-vis other programs.
Mr. Chairman, I think we need to recruit more families with 7 children.
We are doing our part for family growth.
Any other questions for Mark or Joe?
Just have a comment. Yes, sir. Ferguson-Florissant School District developed a partnership with faith-based organizations in their district to identify opportunities for their students to apply for scholarships to more prestigious universities. So that school district is very proactive.
Well, I would want to say one, because that triggers another thing too, and one of the colleagues, Mark Trozang, there's about 20 of his colleagues who are working very, very hard on this. One of them, Doug Katz from Brown Shoe. I had the honor of attending the Jackie Robinson Foundation annual awards dinner a couple weeks ago, which is absolutely a foundation that is supported reaching into low-income neighborhoods that welcome people into the opportunity of a very prestigious education. They have a 100% graduation rate of their scholarship awardees in that foundation, because not only do they provide the money, but they provide the support and the alumni network to help them get across the goal line. That's a model. Brown Shoe is already at the table with that foundation. We're going to invite the foundation here to St. Louis to present. And those are the types of opportunities. And we're cataloging for this May 2nd event. Mayor, we're cataloging programs like you're talking about. So one of the things that we hope to deliver back to you is a catalog, an inventory of all of those programs that are going on in the region, which will be hundreds, if not packing, you know, getting to the 1,000 mark. To say these are things we can learn from and that are going out. So thank you for saying that. I think this issue of reaching, we can't afford, in my opinion, to leave anyone behind in this economy. We, you know, this is the moral imperative or social imperative now buried completely with the economic imperative of growing this regional economy. Can't afford to leave anyone behind.
Any other questions or comments?
Thank you, Bill. Mark, for being here.
If there are places right here, it's in particular formal plans to assist the underserved communities to take this ride or this journey with the metropolitan area.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you say a formal, what we're trying to do is really look at all programs that are there today and then pull them into the heart of the initiative and strengthen those initiatives. And so, absolutely, the answer is yes. How we're going to do that, I'm not exactly sure. This event we're having on the 2nd is we feel like we've done all we can to kind of focus in on what all needs to be done. And we know that there's a lot we don't know. So, Graduate St. Louis, we partnered with them in addition to get the Lumen grant. We were running around the finalists, but we didn't get it. We're back trying to get that. And so that would allow us to have some tuition advance programs to support other initiatives. But yes, we need to get at every aspect of the community and look at this from, you know, long term to short term. What are we going to do to raise the entire community up that's a talent, you know, focused community? So yes, in terms of specifics, that's yet to be determined. I mean, that's
we need to, this is about inviting a dialogue space with Capital Council as well. And there are many programs, but we really want to make sure how do you get the effect programs up to the level of they can actually move.
Yeah, and all of our corporations that are members have people that are on nonprofit boards. They're actively involved in the communities. They sit in a variety of capacities. So it's not just the organizations themselves that are on support of this. It's what are they doing individually as well, and where are they connected?
Yes, sir.
Quick question. You mentioned a lot of corporations are part of this initiative. What about smaller entrepreneurial organizations? What would make it easy for them to get involved? Because a lot of times, small business owners can't get away.
That's right.
So if there's a business case for this going forward, what makes it easy for them to get involved at the grassroots level, bring in those potential students who could be leaders going forward in our community?
Right. Well, I think two things. One is by finding resources and making it easier to see what is available to them because they're so busy. You know, maybe that's one way, but we can help say, you know, look, here's ways you can help your workforce develop because you have a small group. You don't have time to focus on them, but here's all the resources available. That's one way. The second way is we've been very combined with all the other organizations in addition to the chamber in town that are focused on economic development, RPC and others. There are already, you know, partnerships along the line. We see some of our biggest growth in economics from that entrepreneurial side. You know, who's the next Express Scripts to St. Louis, right? Not necessarily how do you make Ameren a little bigger. We want to do that, of course. But you know, that you know, those are the kind of questions. And then where do we build those businesses? Bimodal transportation is huge. So how do we build that up? And how do we look at the entrepreneurs, connect them into the right places, and then bring them into the development piece as well? Joe, do you want to come?
No.
But it's
well, Joe, Mark, I appreciate you being here today. Thank you.
Thanks for your time. Thank you very much.
We'll go to the action items and we'll start with A.
All right, the first one, policy regarding semi-annual formality determination. That seems complicated, and it is. Jason.
The conformity process ensures that programs and activities in our region's long-range transportation plan and transportation improvement programs conform to the state implementation plans for air quality. Projects that receive the most scrutiny during this conformity process are those that add capacity to the transportation system. And if a capacity added project is not included in the conformity analysis, it cannot be added to the PIP. Staff is proposing a semi-annual conformity determination with a schedule that would limit the number of conformity determinations to be done during the year to no more than two. This would include one in the spring and summer, which we typically do our TIP update, and then one other one would be in the autumn and winter if it's needed. Now, an exception would be made if a major transportation funding program outside of our current transportation law is approved. An example of this is the Economic Stimulus Act. 2009. council staff has worked with our partners, including state DOT, to ensure that they would be able to adhere to the schedule that we proposed, and that they would submit capacity management projects according to the full schedule. The staff is ready to close it on the semi-annual informational presentation.
I call your attention before you vote on that. That schedule is critically important to follow, because we get out of whack on that, then we're in trouble. So that's all.
Any questions? Entertainer, so it.
This came up last year when we were talking about amendments to the TIF. And basically, it was kind of backwards. We had established conformity before we voted on the final TIF. I mean, have we looked at that? Is there any way we can do that better so that we approve the final TIF and then you do the conformity? Because, you know, if you do the conformity and then we come out here and want to change the TIF, you know, the thing was, well, we, you know, we don't know if we'll still be in conformity.
Yeah, the goal of having this process in place is that the state DOTs know when we're going to be accepting these projects to include the conformity. And ultimately, the state DOTs know that they would be able to submit projects to us by a certain date. So if they have projects that need to be included, that they want to start construction in October, they would get them submitted to us during our TIF.
No, I think you missed my point. We want to change our, when we have finally approved the TIF, if we want to take something out or put something in, then we screw up the conformity time. That's what I've been told. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's.
Jim knows what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
We've talked
about. In terms of approving that process, it's trying to get a draft EIP out to you before we get into that conformity process. That's where it needs to be fixed, not running conformity after the TIF. Because just the way the federal rules work, you've got to run conformity on the document, the projects that you have, and show that document, those projects are already conforming. So what we need to work on a little bit, and I think Jason's trying to do it this year and going into next year, is get a draft document out sooner so that you all can see it sooner. And if you've got comments and you've got concerns and issues, then that could have factored in before.
Just want to make sure you at least thought that through.
But there still could be a change, and if there is, it fouls things up.
Entertain a motion.
Move to approve.
Got a second?
Second.
Question? All in favor by sign of aye?
Aye.
Jason, thank you. Thank you.
While we have Jason up, he will do both B and C. IDOT has requested modification as well as MoDOT.
Sure. IDOT is requesting to add three new projects to the PIP. All three of them involve pavement interpretation. One is a resurfacing project along at intersections of the approaches at various intersections on Route 3 in Madison County. Total cost is $3 million. The next one is a micro-servicing project on I-270 in Madison County. The total cost for that is $3.5 million. And the final project they're requesting is resurfacing and patching along I-64 in St. Clair County at a total cost of $800,000. Staff recommends approval.
And the money is there?
And the money is there.
Entertain a motion.
It's a motion.
Second. We have a motion. Second. On question. On the right side of aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. Action item C.
All right. MoDOT's requesting to add two new projects to modify the one project that's currently in the TIP. The project they're requesting to add is on Route W in Jefferson County. And this would involve an overlay to raise the grade of Route W to eliminate dip in the roadway. And this project is actually being split out from a project that's currently in the TIP. MoDOT ran into some issues with right-of-way acquisition. So I'll discuss the modified project later, but they're splitting this project out, and the intent is to construct it in 2014. And the total cost for this is $816,000. The other new project is an overlay on Route H in St. Charles County at a total cost of about $400,000. The one project that MoDOT's requested to modify is a project on Route W. They're going to eliminate the scope of work that will be done in 2014. However, the overall cost of the project is going to remain the same as it is now, and this is just because of the unexpected increase in cost in other areas of the project. The staff recommends approval of this.
So, got a motion. Second on the question. All in favor by the sign of aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. Action item B.
St. Louis Streetcar Plan, illustrative project, Terry will address that. And I would, before you start hearing, you may say it, there is a letter requested that's in everybody's packet that is sitting on the table.
All right, in a moment, I'll introduce Kay Kenny, who is the project manager for the study, and he'll give you a brief overview of the streetcar plan. As Ed said, we had a letter from Mayor Slay requesting this action. Unfortunately, he could not be here today, he has to be in Jefferson City. But it is our typical practice that when a major transit corridor study is completed, that we advance that project into the illustrative portion of the long-range plan. And I just want to explain that action before we request it. To be an illustrative project means that you have no higher priority than any other project in the plan. So we do have competing transit projects out there in the plan. It also means that there's no funding identified for it. So we're not setting a priority here. We're not committing funding to it. What we're enabling this project is to move forward at some point into the Federal Transit Administration project development process. And this action would allow that. So the action we are requesting is that we adopt this and have an electric project in the plan. And now I'll introduce Kim Kenny from URS to give a brief overview.
Thank you, Jerry. The St. Louis streetcar plan includes modern streetcar lines running north, west, and south from downtown St. Louis. The feasibility study was managed by the Partnership for Downtown St. Louis, and it included a 20-person steering committee that guided the study, and that included representatives from the public and private sectors. So these were the goals and objectives that drove the planning and design of the streetcar line, the modern streetcar system. First, to increase population and employment in the corridor. The modern streetcar systems that have been growing in popularity around the country have been shown to attract people and jobs to the areas in which they are built, especially in downtowns. And I think it's interesting that in St. Louis, as we talked to major employers along the alignment, that they just took it as a given that this type of investment would help attract employees, would be a recruiting tool, especially for young professionals. Second, support future development. And again, we've seen evidence around the country where these systems have been developed that additional development does occur, and we designed this to spur development along the corridor. I think it's very important, if you look at the third and fourth goals, that we explicitly designed this system to be an important part of the region's transit system. And it is integrated, as you will see in a minute, with the metro system. And we specifically designed it to increase overall transit ridership for the regional system. So here is the initial alignment, east-west, running from the Central West End, and specifically the Central West End Metrolink station, along Lindell and Olive into the downtown, where there is a single track loop ending at Keener Plaza, and there's an illustration of that, what it could look like in your packet. And then the north-south alignment runs from St. Louis and Florissant, all of Florissant 14th, and then the streetcars would make that same one-way loop through the CBD, ending at the Metrolink station at Civic Center. And all of this, this is an important distinction, unlike existing Metrolink, it would all be street running transit. That is, the tracks would be in existing streets, sometimes in a separate right of way, sometimes running in mixed traffic. Modern streetcars should be looked at as smaller scale light rail vehicles. And here are some examples from streetcar systems around the country. The track is the same as light rail track. The electrical system is very similar.
powered by electricity coming from an overhead wire. Ridership. We use the Federal Transit Administration ridership tool called the Aggregate Rail Ridership Forecasting Model. In fact, the person who did the ridership forecasting developed this tool for the FTA. And in the end, bottom line, we were looking at about 7,700 riders on an average weekday on the streetcar system. And the next to last bullet point is very important, and that is we assume that the development patterns along the line were what is there now. And you know, if the effect of this streetcar line turned out to be similar to what we've seen in other cities with that increased development, then we would expect ridership, in fact, to be higher than this over time. To get back to MetroLink, when we did the ridership forecasting, we specifically looked at the impact on MetroLink. And the model indicated that we would see about 500 additional MetroLink riders because of the existence of the streetcar. And if we look at the overall transit system, about 2,700 additional transit riders on an average day. And secondly, most of the trips we're looking at on the streetcar would be trips that included segments on the streetcar and on the existing transit system. We looked at development potential both in areas where development is currently pretty strong and in areas along the alignment where we would hope or expect to see additional development, partly because of the existence of the streetcar. We get into this in fairly great detail in the report, copy of which I have here, and this is also available on the partnership's website. And another second bottom line is that the Lawrence Group, who was part of the study team, estimated that there would be about $540 million of new or additional investment over the first 5 years of the project, and about $2.1 billion over a 20-year period. Again, this is consistent with the experience in other cities that have developed these systems. Project cost estimates. By modern streetcar standards, this is a long line. In fact, it would be the longest in the country. And we estimate now the total capital cost for construction and streetcars and so on would be between $218 and $271 million. Operating costs, and again, we would have, given the fact that we're looking at a system designed to provide serious transit capacity, operating costs would be about $9.7 million a year. So let's look at the flip side. Where is that money going to come from? There was a financial committee as part of the study team, and we are now looking, or we are putting together a financial plan, and we are assuming, as is typically the case in projects like this all over the country, that about 50% of capital costs would come from the federal government. And we are assuming, although based on what's been happening recently, this would change, that there's no funding from the state of Missouri. And the key to the whole local financial piece is the TDD, or Transportation Development District, which would produce funds from property owners along the alignment. And of course, we do expect there to be fare box revenues. So this is still a work in progress. And we're looking beyond that at some additional local funding sources. So that's coming. Next step, immediate next step is today, adoption by the East West Gateway Board and the long range plan that Jerry described. And then the next technical step would be an environmental assessment required as part of the federal project development process. And beyond that, engineering and construction. Questions?
Any comments or questions?
I got some major concerns. had not an opportunity to talk with her slate on this issue. But there are several things come to my mind. First of all, to do this study, how much money is going to cost to do this study?
The study that wasn't completed, it cost $200,000.
It's my understanding to do all this study will be around about $5 million for the whole thing. Is that correct? About five?
That's
been
based on the
environmental. Okay. All pre-construction costs would be more.
So what I'm saying is, first of all, where the money coming from? The $5 million. Secondly, St. Louis County have passed initiatives in recent years more than anyone with the Metro Transit, and we're paying more than our share right now. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the issue. Third, is St. Louis County got North Park, not North Park, West Park. We're talking about as a job center that we're making reference to, you would be in complete conflict with us if you move forward. So we actually have money put aside, so you'd be in conflict with St. Louis County as you go down the road about the federal funding of 50%. But we say in St. Louis County, we need 50% from the federal government and 50% from St. Louis County. So that's where I'm at with that. The other issue is that I'm not quite sure about the property owners, the TDD, there's some issues with that that need to be thought through carefully, has not been thought through carefully, so I have some concerns. But what I want to tell you is that even though I do support the greater metropolitan, I will continue to support it, I'm going to vote, I'm going to abstain from the vote, be neutral in this vote, because as it gets, if I think there's going to be an issue with what we're doing, there could be some conflict. So I want you to understand that as you go forward. There are some concerns, and we have do not have all the answers right now. And that could be a concern for you.
Well, in terms of the TDD, we do not have all the answers to that.
That's what I made reference. And this is a very aggressive project that you have here, you know, and that's moving really fast. And I'm just concerned where all the money's coming from.
And that's a problem. So financial plan looks not only at construction and operation, it's looking at the planning and engineering.
And as you know, we still deal with some other issues at the other fraud issue. And so we need to get some things behind us before we start moving too close, too aggressively forward. Mm-hmm. Again, I support the concept. I'm just not there yet as far as construction and cost and all the things that values, where the money's coming from, is going to be in conflict with things that we already have on the table with us right now. I'm not quite sure. So I want you to understand I'm going to abstain for that because it might be a conflict as you go further down the road.
Understood. And I did want to get back to the sources of non-federal funding for the short-term aspects of project development. And the assumption is, and this has been the assumption from the start, that there would be no funds from the city, from the county, and Metro. That's just been given.
So if you got $5 million, where's the money coming from?
That's what we're in the process of.
And that's what I'm concerned about. I'm just saying, we don't have enough answers, right, from my perspective.
Well, until we have an answer to those questions, the project cannot move forward.
Okay.
I would offer our thank you for those impressive comments. I know it's going to answer your first question. The funds for the study were raised privately. We raised $200,000 privately. We used no public dollars ever at all to engage URS. Our intention would be to look for the environmental funding from the FTA for the next phase of the study, and our intention is to raise the required match, approximately $300,000. We would raise that privately. We've already had favorable conversations with numerous stakeholders around the route. We have a lot more work to do. And the process to move along the idea of the TPD, at the end of the day, we got to sell that to registered voters that are going to benefit from this improved infrastructure. So it's a big, long project. It is serious transit. And we do appreciate your support to at least allow us to move forward and talk to the federal government about the possibility of environmental studies funding, if that is available.
Yeah, real quickly, it seems I remember 20 years ago, like the Metrolink originally, wasn't this one of the potential routes?
That is true, I don't remember.
No. There was never an ad grade through the...
Well, you're talking back in the 90s?
Yeah.
No.
This was not, is there an option?
There was a somewhat similar study done in Northside South Zone. That was done about 70 years ago.
So, do you intend for Metro then to operate this?
Right now, we, no recommendation has even been made about who is going to operate it. We have had discussions with Metro, and there has been certainly no commitment from Metro. There has been none asked. Would it be relatively easy to find an operator for this? Yes. Are there options? Yes. Are we at that stage of having to answer that question? No.
And so, Mr. Nations, I assume that bus services provide to this area already. Has there been analysis of the loss of revenues to Metro that this will generate?
No, we haven't. We haven't done a study in connection with it. We've been in touch with their team. We've watched the study as it has moved along. But there hasn't been a complete analysis from our perspective about how the bus service would be affected.
Yeah, and I would note, Mark, that all these questions would be answered if we go move forward into the environmental analysis, because unless all these questions are answered, FDA would participate in the study.
Do you have the belief, though? I mean, if you look at the numbers, you're talking about maybe $11 a trip on this trip. If you take the what it's going to cost to run by the ridership you project, Metro then would still provide bus service, which would be more affordable. A lot of people can't afford $11 to go this length. Would Metro still be providing bus service to this area, even though the trolley would be there?
Well, it's actually very difficult to answer that question. We have to look at the whole plan, Mr. Kern, and look at our plans in the area. They have designed it, and their professed goal is to make it complementary. But we have to look at one of our responsibilities, one of our most important responsibilities, is to make sure that we're using federal dollars to provide affordable transportation in areas that need it. That creates a Title VI issue for us to make sure that we're fulfilling those responsibilities, but we haven't examined any of that at this point in time.
The fare structure would be similar to or identical to Metro's fare structure.
Again, I want to emphasize the fare structure, the cost of Metro right now is lopsided right now, as you well know.
Yes.
And that lopside is on the St. Louis County side. So we're concerned about additional things as you go forward. Until we have more information about where the money's come from, who's paying for it, the operation of it, I'm going to be neutral this time. I just have to be.
Mr. Hillhouse, this motion appears East-West Gateway is not appropriating any money to this at this time. Okay, so this is just to get the process going, is that correct?
It enables you to start the process, yes.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
Just an observation. I noticed in Boston that part of their subsurface system is using conventional vehicles on paved roadways, albeit those roadways are mostly submerged and not integrated with great traffic. But they've decided, I don't know if it's a cost saving or whatever, but they've decided for a portion of their subway system that it's conventional vehicles on their own. Instead of building tracks, they just built roads underground. And I'm just wondering, are there any successful trolley systems anywhere in the country that just use conventional vehicles and just designate, we're going to be at grade for most of this anyway, so instead of building rails and going through all that, just designate the thoroughfare and separate it with color schemes or whatever from regular traffic and just use conventional vehicles. Has that been used and that would be less expensive?
Conventional vehicles being buses?
Well, it could be something, if you can make a trolley car look like a trolley car, you can make a wheeled vehicle look like a trolley car.
Well, the big difference in the United States has been the great disparity regarding development impact. Rail transit just all over the country has been shown to have a very positive impact on development. And there have been great debates about this, but for whatever reason, rubber-tired vehicles, although they carry a lot of people, Boston and elsewhere, have not had that development impact.
Let me just ask one question. In your presentation, you presented the outlay. You also presented the expense to operate. But I didn't see in your presentation where you projected how much revenue we generated to offset what's the difference between that $9 million operating and projected revenue. I didn't see that.
It's the question regards what percentage of operating costs, and this is a standard question, would be covered by questions out of the fare box. And in our estimate, it would be roughly around 25%, which by industry standards is about, it's okay. And this...
the other 75 will come from where?
That's what the financial plan will cover, from the TDD or from other sources.
Okay.
This will not be the first transit line in the United States to turn a profit.
Okay, what's your wish? I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move that East-West Gateway provide conceptual support for this trolley system.
We have a motion. Is there a second for that?
What is that different than the recommendation by the staff here, or what?
What I mean by conceptual support is to say that we support it in concept, makes sense. We understand that it's good for transportation, it's good for economic development, but I limit my motion to not getting into financials at this point, because I think there are still too many unanswered questions financially.
Jerry, is that basically what we're doing anyway? Is this
what we're doing, but the formality of placing it as an illustrative project in the long range plan is critical for this to ever move forward. If we went to FTA and said, well, we have conceptual support, but we didn't deem it worthy of at least advancing to that part of the plan, but we won't get anywhere.
But that motion will put it in competition with other regional projects for dollars. So it will put it in the mix for other projects to go away for this one to move forward.
Right. Mm. And we didn't get a second on that motion. I'll entertain another motion if somebody wants to go ahead and approve this. For East West Gateway's recommendation, their motion.
What is the urgency?
Mr. Hillhouse, is there an urgency to do this?
The urgency is we cannot advance to this next stage of study in which all these questions would be answered unless we have this action plan. So the project just kind of lays out.
Mr. Chairman, I will make a motion as a strong supporter of public transportation to further study this issue. I want to get just to further study the issue and then have them come back with a recommendation.
At a later time.
Basically, you're asking for a table.
If we approve this the way you want to do it, what happens? You're going to further study, correct, or no?
What happens is then we would have to try to locate funding to do the environmental study. Once we did that, had the environmental study done, which would be done under the auspices of the Federal Transit Administration, then we would have all the answers we need. We would have determined whether or not we had a solid financial plan. We would determine absolute cost for this thing. All the questions that the board has asked, we would have answers to at that point. But unless we do that environmental study, we're not going to have those answers.
I'll make the motion to go ahead and make the recommendation to approve, to move the project forward to do the environmental study.
How much is the environmental study going to cost?
We think about $1.5 million.
Okay. And who's the private? You've got private funds in place to do the EA. Is that right?
Sir, we have invested already $200,000 to do this first study, and we're prepared to go back to some of the same funders who have already given us a preliminary indication of support to raise the $300,000 for the match. We have no intention to ask Metro, City, the county, or any public entity for those dollars for the match.
But the $900,000 will come from the federal government.
Correct. That is our goal, as it usually is funded for the environmental study.
And the problem is, I want you to be clear about this. I do support Greater Metropolitan Area, but when you use federal dollars, that's in conflict. For example, you get an environmental impact study, that puts you ahead of everybody else that hasn't got the impact study. They got things on the tip as well. And that's where the issue comes in. It's a conflict of interest. I'm putting somebody else's project ahead of my project that needs federal dollars. They still can't get federal dollars.
Well, the critical thing, though, is what do you do with it afterwards? Where's the funding coming from? For instance, we have an environmental document completed on Metro South. It's in the illustrative project in the long-range plan. But right now, there is no money to move forward, and there probably won't be any money for a long time.
Again, that is, I didn't want to get on this offline, but that's one of the issues. We use a lot of money for things that we know we're not going to do long-term.
Well, at the time, we
and that's a problem. That. And that's a, we knew somewhat at the time that it wasn't going forward right away because the money wasn't there. I mean, that was obvious.
Then it creates a conundrum for us because we have to have projects ready.
Again,
in case
I understand what you're saying. I just raised the issue that somewhere down the road, this could become a conflict of interest for me personally, okay? And I just don't want to put myself in that position to do that because from my point of view, I think the next one ought to be at Westport where there's thousands of jobs. That's what it's for. Those jobs are already there. We got money. We passed the initiative to collect that money. We're doing that money right now. We're paying more into Metro right now than anybody else is. I'm just saying, as you go forward, these things got to take into consideration. And again, I had my opportunity to talk with Mayor Slay about his own issues, having talked with John, with Metro, about where this comes with the operation part of it. These are things that are concerning me. I'm not saying it's a great idea, it's a good conceptual. I'm just saying there are some answers that I have, and I have asked some questions I have, and there's no answers to at this point in time. And if you move forward, you put up this great. Sure. I'm sorry, it takes
so
much time.
John, your motion again in a second, so I'm going to give the floor to Mr.
Kern. I'd like to move that we postpone this till next meeting. The mayor of St. Louis is the big advocate. Right. His letter is great, but he's not here today. Right. Maybe we can get some answers.
I will draw on. We have a motion.
I'll second
the motion. Yeah, motion, second, and hold it off until next meeting. On question, on favor by sign of aye.
Aye.
Opposed, aye. Action item E.
That's not a meeting, the only time it works. Your memo, it looks complicated, but I'll try to simplify it a couple of sentences. We received a grant. The board has already approved it. The grant simply part of a nationwide effort to move transportation projects more quickly, efficiently, and it's through the GIS program. When you see the term geospatial, and all of that. As a matter of fact, we have a presentation on GIS and how we can center in on things and all of this. One of our partners is the MORAB, and we need to enter into an agreement, and this is from a grant.
So moved. I have a motion. Is there a second? Okay. Question? All in favor by the sign of aye.
Aye.
Cool. Ayes have it. Action item F.
Action item F, Freedom Security, Nick.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This month's regional security expenditures, the funds for these expenditures will come from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Assistant Secretary of Preparedness Response Grant, as well as the Department of Homeland Security's Urban Area Security Initiative, Metropolitan Medical Response System, and Port Security Grant. The memo in your packet outlines all these expenditures. I can answer any questions you may have. I should point out also that Assistant Chief Rob Watkins with the Wentzville Fire Protection District is here with us today and can answer any questions you may have on the urban search and rescue purposes that are in the memo.
Questions, comments? Entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second. We have motion second. On question. On favor by sign of aye.
Aye.
Opposed, ayes have it. Under new business, John Laker, did you want to address the council?
I just had a comment and a question. One relates to a discussion earlier. Given the uncertainty of federal dollars down the road, it's important that we would be very careful that we don't spend hundreds of thousands of dollars for engineering or whatever if we don't have really reasonable assurance that those dollars will be available to build that road. Now, obviously, this question was before us, before was just, it wasn't approval of any money, but clearly that's something I think as a board we need to be very sensitive to. Even if we got the dollars in our pocket, and we don't spend hundreds of thousands of dollars unless there's reasonable assurance that we can actually do it. The question is really regarding the federal cuts that are occurring for the next 6 months. Is there any impact at all on our operating budget here or on the pass-through money that we receive as a result of that?
Jerry would be better. Jerry, on the sequester thing, where
well, in terms of our operating budget, I don't think we're going to see any impact on that whatsoever. Most departments are dealing with, we're not going to see significant additional cuts. A lot of the stuff we're using about the highway pressure fund, and that's protected from the sequester, for example. Some discretionary federal programs could be effective, but we don't see any impact.
Now, sure. We may have a different answer next month, as you well know.
Mr. Hillhouse, do you have anything on your new business?
I have none.
Okay. Anybody else? I'm sorry, Mr. Mayor.
I know that we have had an impact on the Homeland Security funding through the STARS organization. So we are taking a cut there with sequester. And we need to be aware of that as well, because our funding will drop considerably.
We're going to be at the point of almost preservation, am I correct, depending on the amount. Ballpark figure, what is that?
Well, last year we received $2.9 million, and we don't anticipate any more than that. We anticipate less than that. The other issue is the Department of Homeland Security was advised by the United States Congress to reduce the number of urban areas that are in the program to a number of 25. Just found out 2 days ago that St. Louis is at number 21. So we're in that group of 25 urban areas that should be in the program, but we still haven't been told how much money.
We don't know today.
So one thing they did tell us was 5% cut because of sequestration. And we don't know where those cuts are going to lie yet, but we're waiting with bated breath to find out.
I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Mr. Chairman, one other question. This is for the director. Have we heard anything else about the Arch Grounds expansion program? Because I know that East West Gateway was involved in that whole discussion as well.
Ed can answer that better than I can.
Well, I think our intention is we're working on the transportation piece of the Arch Grounds, and that part is funded. Our intention, I think, is to come to you guys in April to talk about not only the Arch Grounds, but the Mississippi River Bridge, the local projects, and the Poplar Street Bridge all together, because they work all together. So we would like to kind of put before you what all the plans are, how they go together, what the order of construction will be, so you have the full picture, because you really can't see it without looking at all those together.
No, and I certainly agree with that. But the Arch Grounds expansion project is more than just about transportation. It's a quality of life issue, it's a cultural development, it's an economic development engine that is intended to really help downtown St. Louis, but also the Illinois side of the river. And I haven't heard much discussion lately about the Illinois side of the river.
That's a different organization that is setting that up, private, public, the whole thing. If the board so wishes, we can ask for someone to give us a report on that and let us know what's progressing. We can
they have a great presentation that they do that would tell you all that stuff.
Okay.
But that's not us.
Okay, that's Maggie Hill is on the seventh floor, right?
Maggie, Walter, all of them that are working together on that. In fact, there was a good article in Post, I believe, last week. But now, what I was referring to was simply the highway, the park over the river, over the road.
Okay. Mr. Mayor, also on April the 16th, City Arch River is doing their report to the community over at the America Center.
theater there, so.
What time?
I believe it, doors open at 5, I believe, and I think it starts at 6.
Okay.
8:30 or so, and I'll have a public reading again, so.
They originally had that when it snowed, and they had the camp, if you recall.
Right. Okay.
So.
We have to do it again. I'll entertain a motion to.
So.
All favor by an eye.
Aye. Albert, how are you doing, sir?